Devices Radio Network.
Drugs and Stuff is for informational and educational purposes only, and this program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Guys, welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. You are listening to Advices Radio Network. Dave has a lurgy. Did I say that right?
Yeah, the lurgy.
The lurgy or a lurgy? Which is it?
The lurgy.
The lurgy. Dave has the lurgy right now, meaning for all you guys in the U.S., Dave is sick. But nonetheless, we are pushing forward. We're recording a show. Dave was just showing me these lab results for a court case he's working on. What was that last product? So they took the stuff that was taken from the guy. They tested it.
Yeah.
What was this last product supposed to contain, and what did it actually contain?
The that one we were just talking about was supposed to be the test 400.
Yeah.
Was supposed to contain nth, sip, prop, and isocap, and all it contained was sip.
Huh. Okay.
Then the destrenum mast was supposed to contain destrenum mast.
Yeah.
And it contained test sip, test prop, trenase, and trenenth. No mast whatsoever. Now, that's quite common.
Oh, wow.
Generally speaking, if you find a drug that's supposed to have mast in it and it's got tren in it as well, they don't bother with the mast.
No kidding. No kidding, man. So no mast around it all, but it had two different kinds of tren in it.
Yep. And there's another one, one rip, so trenase, test prop, and mast prop. And it's test prop, trenase, and trenenth.
Okay.
And that is really just about it.
That's a bummer, man. That's a bummer.
Wasn't a big case. It's very common. Very, yeah. Very common. Huh. Yeah. On all the orals, I had virtually nothing in it, apart from the Dianabol was Dianabol, okay. And the Tamoxifen was Tamoxifen.
Okay.
And then there was a lot of caffeine tabs.
Really? So he's not going to get any trouble for that, right?
No, those caffeine tabs look like they might have been pushed as DMP.
Oh, wow.
Because they were in yellow capsules.
Okay.
Yeah, they were in yellow capsules.
Let me ask you this, Dave. So a guy gets popped. He has all these different vials and pills. All these pills come back as fake. Is that going to help him out at all at the end of the day? Like, well, I wasn't really selling D-ball because it didn't have any D-ball, in it, something like that.
We have a charge of intent to supply and conspiracy to supply.
Okay. So it doesn't even have to be in it is what you're telling me.
So if he was to sell those drugs as what they were supposed to be,
yeah,
and if he didn't... If at the point of arrest he said, look, it's all fake, none of it's got anything in it.
Yeah.
Then it would probably put some leeway onto his case. But if he didn't say anything until after the forensic reports came back,
yeah,
then the argument would be he didn't know.
Yeah.
And he was still intending on selling it as.
Okay, I gotcha.
It's like if you get caught selling cocaine and it's 2% pure,
mm-hmm,
you're still going to get charged with selling cocaine,
mm,
even though it's absolute garbage.
You should get an extra charge in that case for selling the terrible shit. Off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, so, one thing I wanted to address.
Courts can look at it quite dimly if what they perceive as you selling has a high health risk.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Well, there was a company called Nucleus Peptides, which was, as it sounds, a company selling peptides.
Okay.
And they got hammered because they were selling cardinine.
Okay.
And the thing is with peptides over here, you can't sell peptides as sports supplements. You can't sell them for human consumption. You can only sell them as research drugs.
Right, same here in the US.
So he was actively marketing these as performance drugs and sports supplements.
Yeah.
And they did go a little bit to town on him because when they did I wasn't involved in the case in any way, shape, or form, but when they did the reports on it, they cited all the animal studies on cardinine causing cancer.
Right.
So they didn't put any relevance to dosage or anything like that. So obviously the court heard that this man was selling the drug as a sports supplement that had a proven track record for causing cancer.
So they must have thrown the book at him.
So that did reflect in his sentencing, because the whole pitch was that you're not only breaking the law,
yeah,
but you're doing it very carelessly with no regard for people's health, because sure, you're pushing a product that has this track history.
Which I guess I can see how the court could be swayed in a situation like that. They don't know anything else other than what they're being told by, you know, the prosecuting attorney. So, yeah.
And if you've got five different scientific studies there all showing the same result.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of that though, Dave? I mean, I know that, you know, us in bodybuilding, we take that stuff a little bit on the light side. I know that carterine is pretty popular, and people say that, like, yeah, it's dose dependent. So, you know, realistically, they were jacking those doses up to give those rats cancer. I mean, it's kind of scary to me, you know, thinking about that. At the same time, I've used it and it worked freaking fantastically. So
I am a bit mixed with it, because it's the same argument is, take one aspirin, you'll be fine. Take 50, you're going to be in a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
I'm a bit 50-50 with it, in that dose can have a huge impact on how toxic a drug is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, with such a checkered track history, and that's the only studies we've got to go on, because there are no other clinical trials because it was abandoned.
Right.
I think you do have to err on the side of caution, and you shouldn't be casual about its use.
I think that's a good way of looking at it, for sure. Hey, listen, so we've got a bunch of questions from our thread. Guys, if you want to take part in our programming, we have threads over at the Advices Radio group on Facebook. I know Facebook is not the new fandangled way of communicating anymore. It's not the new social media network, but it is a great place to have groups. And there are a lot of groups that are still pretty popular there. Like, I go and check out Bodybuilding by Bodybuilders on a regular basis. Nate Spears group. Cool dude. Great positive forum that you can see what's going on in the sport. We have a group, and basically we have it just to post up the shows, to talk about them, and to create these question threads. So we've got questions there today. But first, Dave, I wanted to address a topic that I saw on our YouTube page. There was a listener who had some feedback, and it wasn't necessarily positive. At the same time, I feel like it was a little bit on the misinformed side. I respect where everybody's coming from, and I don't think that this is like somebody who's just trying to troll. I feel like he genuinely, you know, was coming from a legit place in his heart. So he said, for someone that earns, so last week or last episode, we talked about health supplements or health issues that people have that you're seeing in lab work. And you had said, basically in a nutshell, things along the lines of, that people you see are they're doctoring their labs by, you know, dropping their protein way down, not going to the gym for a while. They're, you know, increasing their water by tenfold. And then all of a sudden their labs look good. And then they're like, oh yeah, now I'm healthy. I'm apparently fine. I'm going to go back and hit a heavy cycle. And that was basically the point of that conversation. Response here from this guy. He says, for someone that earns money from liver protection and organ health, how about Dave gets asked about his chronic heart failure? It's like having a fat personal trainer teach you about healthy eating. So first of all, Dave, I wanted to ask you, do you earn money from liver protection? Because I remember we had on Richard Foster, who is the owner of Strum Supplements. He created a liver protection product that you had formulated. But if I recall, and this is, so I'm just, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I did want to kind of just address this. And I know that you're completely transparent. You know, we've talked about all this stuff before. We've talked about your heart issues. So, but at the same time though, we are new to this YouTube venue. You know, everything, all of our listeners have been through audio. So the people who've listened to the previous 33 episodes, you know, they're right on board with us, but we're going to obviously find new people that haven't listened. So just to put you on the hot seat here for a minute, remind me, because I really can't remember totally, but I thought you said that you don't make anything off of that.
I don't make anything off that supplement, no. I do make money from giving advice, yes. You know, I do charge for advice services to certain people. I do a lot of stuff for free as well. I mean, I don't charge everybody, but that is part of my business model, is the fact that I charge for services involving in managing risk for people who use steroids. So yes, I don't have chronic heart failure. I have heart failure. I have chronic kidney failure. My heart failure is, well, it's very, very low end. I'm on the lowest dose of Ramipril I can be on. I'm on the lowest dose of Bisprenol I can be on. And my next review is a discussion about whether we come off the meds completely. So that's how impacting my heart failure is.
And what caused this, if you're aware?
Lifestyle. The consultant said to me, and now I have a little bit of history of heart problems in the family, and I'm not going to sit in and go that, oh, it's genetic, it's a genetic trait, because I don't think it is.
Okay.
But his exact words to me were, if it's history-based, you will have to manage it for the rest of your life. He says, if it's steroid-based, it will sort itself out, given enough time of you not using and being a bit more cardio-focused.
Okay.
So the honest answer for me is I feel it's predominantly lifestyle based. I feel it's predominantly because of what I did to myself, and more so how I failed to manage the stopping of what I was doing. That's where I think the biggest issues became, because yes, my heart is enlarged. Yes, my heart had an overly enlarged myocardium. The wall was thick, and that's why it struggles to beat correctly.
Yeah.
But if I'd have maintained a level of fitness in the gym, I could have slowly regressed, but I didn't. Okay. I pulled back quite quickly. So as a result, though my size stayed up, my physical ability didn't.
Okay.
My physical fitness, my anaerobic activity didn't stay up. And as a result, my heart got very unfit very quickly.
Okay.
So I went from not having heart failure at 400 pounds, stupid as it sounds, to having heart failure at 350 pounds.
Mm.
Because I didn't keep my intensity level up in my training. I didn't downscale everything else and maintain that level of fitness. I basically just crashed it. So, you know, I learned there that, you know, if you're coming off something like, you've got to ease back down. You can't just drop off.
I feel like, you know, in bodybuilding, we are very extreme people. And I know that extreme people, when they make a change, they're like, okay, I'm going to make this huge change. I mean, you know that I come to this whole thing having gotten into recovery and then years later, you know, gotten into bodybuilding, really became obsessed with it for a long time. And over the years, managed to find some balance in it. But I know like a lot of people that are in recovery, for instance, they make a decision like, I'm going to get into fitness. And then boom, they're going to the gym 7 days a week and they're doing an hour cardio. And I can imagine it's the same as true when you do the opposite. Like, okay, now I'm not going to do that anymore for whatever reason. And then they just lose their minds, you know, and I guess, and go the opposite direction. So I imagine you're saying you were very extreme in one direction and then you went very extreme in the other.
Well, with me, it was more a case of, I replaced the obsession with what I was doing with an obsession with work.
Okay.
So then I put all my energy and time into work, which didn't leave much time for anything else.
Okay.
So the two things I addressed when I stopped was more time with family and more time focusing on financial stability for the family and myself. And as a result, the training did drop off more than it should have done. So that's sort of where I created the environment for my heart problems while I was taking shitloads of drugs and being stupidly big.
Yes.
But I didn't manage that correctly to avoid the pitfall that I now have. When I stopped that pursuit. So, and the kidney is predominantly drugs. It's lifestyle as well, size and everything else, but predominantly drugs. Now, as I said, the heart problem is very manageable and even very likely to be fixable completely.
Yeah.
No problem whatsoever. The kidney situation never will be. So that just needs to be managed long term, but it has improved. I mean, I brought it up. For the level I'm at, I brought it up quite significantly.
Well, and here's what my thought was, Dave, the way that I've seen you, because obviously, you know, I put, you know, everything together that we do at Advices Radio. And at the end of the day, I've made the decisions like what shows we do and what shows that we don't do. And I believe in you and I believe in your message. And I think that a lot of people who haven't heard you speak in the last couple of years may think of you as the guy from the Under Construction movies. Honestly, man, I don't know if I would want that guy doing a podcast with us, because I don't know if that guy would be representing things that I believed in. I mean, he was extreme. He was doing some crazy shit, and he was definitely like entertaining to watch. But I felt like it, in a way, it was a really dark, self-destructive behavior. And I don't think that that's who you are today. I feel like that you've unfortunately had to learn some hard lessons from, you know, what you had done in the past. And I know that you wouldn't go back and change it, because it's brought you to who you are today. But I do feel like it has definitely changed who you are, and it's changed what you bring here. And I think that it's affected the way it's really, I think I know you have a passion, is what I guess I see in you, to help other people not make mistakes and not end up in serious positions. You and I have had a lot of conversations off the air where you're trying to talk some sense into a guy who's doing something reckless. He's going to hurt himself. And I know shit like that keeps you up at night. So, you know, regardless of how you got here, I feel like your purpose and your intent is pure. And so I believe in that. And honestly, I mean, at the end of the day, I guess the buck does stop with me and putting these programs out. And I believe in what you're doing. I believe in your message.
I mean, to go into the individual comment, where I come from with it is, and I understand what he's saying, but where I come from it is that I've educated myself. Am I the most knowledgeable? No, I'm not at all. But I have a reasonable rounding of knowledge. But I've also got the experience. Now, how many people do you see criticizing coaches because they've not stepped on stage, because they've not done or achieved in the field that they're now teaching?
Yeah.
But I've lived through this.
Yeah.
I know what it's like from the mental perspective of going down that rabbit hole of drug use,
mm-hmm,
through to facing the consequences of what you've done to yourself, to facing the realization that thing that you strive to be has actually, in a way, destroyed you, and now you'll never achieve anything similar to it.
Hmm.
I can never take steroids again. I take a TRT dose, which is properly managed by a doctor, and I will never take any more than that.
Yeah.
And I can't, because I can't risk my health by doing so. I only take TRT because it's a medicinal requirement. Otherwise, I wouldn't bother with that. And I think, you know, so there's, having lived the experience, I can talk about areas that other people may not actually look at. Particularly when it comes from a mental health point of view of accepting the changes and realizing what now your choices are, and just coming to terms with the fact that you'll never be what you were.
Yeah.
And going through that reel of being very physically focused and forgetting about the rest of you as a person. I mean, I must admit, you just said then that you weren't sure you've ever had the guy who was UC on. I mean, you did interview me at that time. Did you think I was a particularly negative person then?
I would. Now, when I say negative, I would say you were in a darker place, man. When I say negative, I mean, you know, we had last episode, we talked about your friend Darren, who passed away.
Yeah.
And I can't help but wonder, man, you know, because like, you know, you said that he ended up putting himself in like a coma from his lifts, and the work that he was doing in the gym was like, it was breaking him down. I can't help but wonder if he had a death wish. I really can't. And that he was, I can't help but wonder that kind of thing though.
I think with Darren, what it was he was, because before that point, he played rugby at weekend, went out drinking with the lads, had a decent job with BMW. And it was your typical urban life.
Okay.
That if he'd have passed at that point, it would be a very unremarkable life.
Okay.
And he decided that when he was highly religious as well, actually, he was a devout Christian. But when he got told that basically you're going to die within a year, which was 8 years ago, he decided that he was going to make his life stand for something or count for something in one way or another.
Okay.
He chose physical. But the thing is with Darren as well, it was that kept him going. I noticed when he had, and like all of us, he went through periods of life where there were problems in his life, problems in his private life. I remember a relationship ending that he was involved in, and it didn't end particularly well. The impact that had on his health was huge. So much so, I actually thought at the time it was going to be the end of him. He deteriorated massively. And Darren's life was very much governed by how mentally well he felt and how focused. And that's what the lifting gave him. It gave him a target. It gave him a focus. It gave him purpose.
I was, I guess, you know, just trying to read into
I was probably way off then.
But to get on point,
I actually don't think you were.
Okay. Well, but because I wanted to get to my point, though, was I don't think you were like a negative person. Like, gosh, I don't like being around that guy because he makes, you know, he's always talking about negative stuff. You're not negative like that, but that you did seem very self-destructive. You know, you were so focused on your goal that you didn't concern yourself with health, you know, and that, so that's what I would say. So negative in that way. Yes.
Fair enough. And I think you could say that of Darren at times as well.
Okay.
So I do, and I think that's the thing with these things. It's not one thing. You come in and out of dark places when you go on these journeys.
And here's the thing too. I don't think there's anybody out there that's taken bodybuilding to an extreme. And by that, I'll say anybody out there who's competed, let's say for instance, that's one of many ways that you could take it to an extreme. I don't think there's anybody out there that's competed that hasn't gone down the rabbit hole to an extent, at least. Maybe not to the level you did, maybe not to the level Darren did, but you know, to some extent, I think we all can relate to that. So I'm not criticizing you by saying that either.
No, I don't take it as a criticism. Well, the thing is, even if you are, it's your God-given right to do so. I don't say what I did was right or wrong. All I can say is it was my journey that I chose to take.
Sure.
There were positives and there were negatives, and I try and use the negatives in an encouraging way, and I try and use the negatives as lessons.
Yeah.
And I mean, I got a message last night off a strongman I used to coach, and I always had a bit of a fight with him over doses.
Okay.
And he didn't like me pulling his doses right back and making him clear out a bit and take some time off and the rest of it. And he messaged me last night, and we stopped working together. And I wouldn't say we left on bad terms, but it was always a bit weird. It always felt like there was things unsaid.
Yeah.
Anyway, he messaged me last night just saying, I just want to thank you so much. And I was like, why? And he went, because two of my strongman friends died last week.
Oh my gosh.
From heart attacks, without doubt. Two of them, without doubt, brought on by their use. And I want to thank you for teaching me and forcing me to take a better view of how I do things. And, you know, that was quite surprising because, like I said, this was one of those guys that really liked to up the dose, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, the pros are taking this, so I need to take this and this sort of thing. And I think when he left me from coaching, he left me because he felt, I don't think he saw how much he had actually progressed.
Okay, yeah.
In what we'd done work-wise together. But obviously now, reflectively, he looks back and does see the benefit from it all. But that's a story that I'm seeing more and more and more and more. Kidney issues. Steroids are now regarded as, or becoming regarded as, very kidney toxic. They never used to be. We always used to say, no, it's not renal issues whatsoever. The world of renal is now starting to say, you know, hang on a minute, actually, we do regard, and they regard FSGS now as a disease associated with drug use and bodybuilding. And this is stuff that's changed in the last 2-3 years, you know what I mean? So it's an ever-changing world, but going back to the original post, anyone and everyone is entitled to their opinion. And if he feels that me giving health and safety advice because of my history or even my current situation is wrong, then he's welcome to that. But I wouldn't relate myself to the fat person trying to give diet advice. I'd relate myself to the fat person that's lost weight trying to give diet advice. Because I've been through it. Yes, I made the mistakes and I learned from them and I know what they are. And I also know the mental issues that go with that. I know the mental fights that you have and the cognitive disassociation that will come into play where you try and reason with yourself that you're not that bad and you're only doing this and you're only doing that and other people are doing far worse than you and other people take far more than you and they're all right. Well, I'm sure those two strongmen thought they were fucking all right before they went to bed that night and then never woke up in the morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all think we're all right. In the middle of UC, apart from the very end, I thought I was all right.
Mm. Until you weren't.
You know what I mean?
Until you weren't, and that had to be the biggest wake-up call of your life, the biggest wake-up call of your life, really, you know, or one of them.
I mean, I did look at the warning signs, and I did question them a couple of times, and I actually even went to my GP.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to hear a negative comment, so when he was dismissive, I was like, hey, he said it's fine, I'm off.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not look too much further into this. Let's just take his word.
When if I had been who I am now, I'd have went, well, I disagree with you. I think you're wrong. I want a second opinion.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, I just want that professional said, basically said to me, in my head, said to me, you're okay to do what you're doing.
Yeah. So,
I
was just going to wrap us up here with this topic, you know, and just say, you know, we could probably keep talking about it. This is something that we've addressed before. We will continue to, you know, kind of flush out more of these ideas as we go in this program. But, you know, at the end of the day, not everybody is going to like every program. So if this isn't for somebody in particular, that's fine too. Dave, there was something one person, Jax, asked, and I'm going to guess that the answer is no. Because I really wanted to just kind of keep moving on here and roll on with the show. He says, can you tell us the name of the lab that we were talking about earlier in the show? I'm going to guess that that's a no. You can't tell us what, because this is an active case, correct?
I don't even know.
You don't even know. Okay.
It's not on the paperwork.
Okay.
It describes the vials and the ingredients list, but it doesn't tell you a brand marking or anything. So I have no idea.
Okay. And for the most part, they're off the market anyway now. So, but that's pretty common. That's pretty common though, to see like Masteron replaced with Trend and from the lab results you've seen. That's scary, man. Hey guys, we're going to take just a really brief pause from this episode of Drugs and Stuff to shout out our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. Of course, you guys have heard me say it before, if you use our code, it will let them know that you support what we are doing at the network, plus you will get some additional savings. Our codes are Advices as well as Advices Oats. Advices Oats will get you 25% off of their oatmeal blends. Also, I want to give a quick shout out to Dave Crossland. Thanks, Dave, for always being here with us on the Drugs and Stuff podcast. Guys, if you are looking to put on some mass and get a hold of Dave, you can work with him. Reach out either at Facebook or over at his website, crosslands.org.uk. Reach out and see if Dave could be the right coach for you. One other thing I wanted to point out for anybody who doesn't know, Dave, how much does your bulldog weigh, first of all?
About 40 kilos, I think.
So that's like 80-something pounds. He's sleeping at Dave's feet right now. So if you hear this weird sawing sound on and off, that's him. He's under the desk right now snoring his head off. So we need to get him a CPAP, Dave, I think. I'm looking at the questions here. So, guys, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we do have a bunch of questions. Also, I should note that this program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Our code is Advices, and you can use that code to get a discount as well as to let them know that you support what we're doing here. We're going to have an ad in this program as well. So I urge you to check out True Nutrition because they're doing a lot of really great stuff, a lot of great good quality health supplements, good quality protein products. I've been using them for years. So Anne-Marie asks, do you guys use berberine year round, regardless of whether cutting or bulking? We didn't answer this question. She posted this a few weeks ago. Dave, we talked a little bit about metformin. We've talked a little bit about glucose control. What are your thoughts again on berberine? I can't remember if we actually went over your thoughts on it.
I think it's definitely very advisable in a bulk. I don't think it's as necessary in a cut. The fact that you're doing cardio, the fact that you're at a calorie restriction, which is ultimately going to result in carbs being low, is going to increase your insulin sensitivity anyway. So I don't see as much benefit from it in that scenario, but very much in a bulk, very much when you're pushing food to offset the impact that those high carbs are going to have.
I see people have different responses with berberine, and I myself have had positive and negative responses. If I've used too much, I'll end up going flat, just like someone would with metformin. But I've also seen it work really good in specifically two places. With a cheat meal, I found that I end up not holding as much, call it like negative fluid, subcutaneous fluid. Mm-hmm. And also, I got into this great space where I was training after meal two. I ate carbs with meal one and meal two. I took berberine with meal one. And after meal two, I would go in and train, and I was getting these phenomenal pumps. Plus, I was in a fat loss diet at the time, and I found that to be pretty effective. But like I said, I've also seen it where it's easy to overdo, just like metformin, in that you can end up going flat. So especially if you're dieting, you know, you don't want to feel flat. You don't want to add to the fact that you're not getting a pump, right? So
the other thing you've got to watch is as well is take too much of it, and it can upset the stomach. It's not in a lot of people, but I'd probably say about 5%.
Okay.
We'll find that maybe even more than maybe 10 will even find that they can get a bit of a stomach upset if they take too much. So obviously that's going to be negative if you're not eating properly or your stomach's upset and you're not digesting properly. So, all valid points, and definitely I could see very much use within a cheat meal. Definitely. But from a point of view of just increasing insulin sensitivity,
yeah,
your diet process is going to do that anyway to a large extent, and that my main use is to protect that when we're pushing high food. But it will have benefits depending on how you approach your diet and how important certain aspects of that are to you. For example, training and getting a pump so that you feel that the workouts are still progressive can be very, very important, and it can be quite devastating when you start to go completely flat and just feel like you're going through the motions. So I can see where that would be beneficial as well in a morale and a mental health sort of point of view when you're prepping for a show.
Thoughts on Osterine and Carterine liquid instead of pills? Doses split twice, or doses split twice a day or once a day? So I guess first, is he's asking two questions here. Is there going to be any difference between using liquid Osterine and Carterine versus tablet?
The only way I can see it possibly is if you hold it sublingual and use that blood vessel under the tongue to get it into the bloodstream faster. I don't think there's going to be much. There should on paper,
yeah,
be a slightly better bioavailability from the liquid. I've never seen a study on this, and I don't think there are any, so I can't say in any way factual whether there is an impact either way.
Yeah.
And with dosing, I would suspect with the YK that you're probably going to be better in a large single dose daily than you are in a split dose.
It was Osterine and Carterine.
Oh, sorry, I thought it was YK.
We were talking about that earlier. I don't know why that would be on your mind.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone saw it. We had a little let's see what's in our drawers before we started. I honestly don't know if there's any benefit to splitting the dose, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I guess it would depend on half-life. I haven't done a lot of SARMs. I personally don't use Osterine.
Let me make a note and I will check.
Okay, Osterine half-life. I believe that Carterine is a long half-life, but we should figure that one out too. I'm sure somebody else knows. Maybe we can get somebody to chime in here. We'll see. Maybe somebody will tell us. We got Omar Hurtada. Shout out to Omar. He's listening and watching right now.
And I'll also look at blood plasma peaks as well.
Okay. You know, one thing I have liked about liquid in general, I would prefer to have like a, you know, high quality pressed tablet. But I've seen shitty pressed tablets that look great but contain little to no product in it. So I guess it depends. As long as all things are equal, one thing I have liked about Liquid is that you can dose it more accurately, more exactly where you want it. So if the tablet is 25 milligrams and or it's 25 milligrams per milliliter, you could still get, say, 15 or 17 or 20 milligrams. You know, you could break it up exactly where you want it. Same with like Clen versus buying 40 microgram tablets that are like tiny little tabs that, you know, are impossible to break up. Liquid, you could
sat there with a razor blade just trying to take quorum.
Exactly. Versus Liquid, you know, you could break that down to 10 micrograms if you wanted to. So, yeah. A little bit more on Osterine. My buddy's girlfriend wants to go on Osterine and is prescribed thyroid medication. Do you think the Osterine would affect that in any way?
No, it shouldn't do. Not in any way that's in any point marketable.
I wonder why she's prescribed thyroid meds, you know?
Well, I would assume underactive thyroid, which could have an impact on her hormone production, but the Osterine won't impact the thyroid. I mean, the whole thing about Osterine is it's selective.
Okay.
So it will select muscle tissue. Yeah. So there should be no cross impact there whatsoever.
All right. I've been seeing more and more with the issues. I know that Victoria Felkar, my girlfriend, she works with a lot of females. She fixes a lot of females, basically women that have competed, gotten themselves into trouble. And there's some weird stuff I've seen with thyroid that have to do with sex hormones that it just, I don't know. It just makes me wonder more, you know, if she's on thyroid medication, why she's on thyroid medication. And I don't have an answer as to, you know, what the cascade of things would be to end her there. But it does make me wonder if she wants to mess around with you know.
Prep diets hormones. Can be extremely damaging to females' endocrine systems.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon to see women who particularly have been very conscious of maintaining lean body weight that they have shit hormone production.
I got one up here, and I don't think we've talked about this before. I have a question about injecting sites. I will never forget watching Dave Crossland's gnarly tricep and calf pins in his film. I didn't remember that. You did calf shots?
Yeah.
Were those comfortable for you?
Step up the men.
Oh, God.
Generally speaking, they were all right. Odd one, but you get the odd one that's always going to be a bit dodgy anyway.
Okay. He has a question in here with that. He says, I have only ever done glutes and shoulders, but direct contact, I would really like to get the same advantage in my lacking muscles, but I'm afraid I don't know how to pin things like biceps, lats, etc. Could you guys maybe give some general tips on what muscles to hit can be hit and the best spots for each, and maybe a little tutorial? Dave, break out the syringes. We're gonna do some rear delt injections today.
There's a lot of discussion and both ways over does sighting improve muscle growth in that area. From a science point of view, there is a slightly increased concentration in hormone in the muscle that is sighted.
Okay.
And part of this reason is because the physical process of injection can cleave the ester off the hormone.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so it literally breaks the bond apart physically. Footy, stop licking your knob. Hey! Yeah, noisy shit. Hang on. I'll find some of the throat, the little bastard. Hey! Back it in. Yeah, little bugger.
We have something called PETA. I don't know if you're familiar with PETA. So yeah. Ethical treatment of animals, Dave. I think I'm going to make a call here.
He's coming to my desk now for a fuss. Now, with regards to what I've always felt with sighting is that if it's in a small muscle group, so delts, arms, calves, you will get a benefit from that apart from the fact that there is a slightly increased localized level of hormone, mainly it's because you get pain. And because you've got pain in that muscle, you focus on that muscle so much better when you train.
Yeah, it's got more inflammation in it.
It's got more inflammation, it creates more pain. Brain goes where the pain is, so it focuses on the muscle, so you get a much better mind-muscle connection when you train it.
Yeah.
That doesn't carry over into large muscle groups for the simple reason that you've only got a small localized area of discomfort and it's a large muscle.
Yeah.
So you don't get the same connection as you would do in something like a bicep or a tricep where the whole muscle you feel. You can cite any muscular tissue in the body that you want, technically. Certain ones, depending on the individual, I would avoid. So forearms is incredibly dense fiber, and as a result, when you push fluid in there, it is incredibly painful.
I'm hurting just thinking about it, man.
Also, you have a huge number of nerves running through there.
Yeah, and all those tendons and everything. There's no way. I can't imagine anything.
It's not advised. It is viable. It's not advised. So you can definitely do comfortably two heads of the tricep. You can do either head of the bicep. Medial delt is very common. Some people I know do front delt, but I've always found it to be difficult. But part of that problem is because of my pec tear and the amount my front delts have to kick in when I do pressing movements. So the overall load is just too much. You can do rear delt, but it does feel very odd because you just feel like you've got a big lump at the back of your shoulder and it tends to go very hard and doesn't tend to swell with flexibility. Lats, I would never do again.
Yeah, lats are easy for me.
I hated lats. I found lats awful. But then I couldn't do quads either.
Yeah, I was never a big quad fan myself. But, you know, at the end of the day, Dave, I mean, so you were saying you're basically getting this discomfort, you know, and I'm saying you're getting that extra fluid. We're talking about inflammation. But just to be clear here, from what I understand, you're not going to directly get, like, site-specific growth, right? It's like
it's not the muscle fascia stretching thing. Absolute fucking bollocks. Okay. Not happening. Okay. No, I'm not talking about site trigger growth in that sense. What I'm talking about is because my biceps hurting.
Yeah.
When I train biceps, I focus straight away on the muscle I'm trying to hit.
Right.
And as a result, my mind muscle connection is stronger. I engage my bicep more efficiently, so therefore I have a more productive workout.
That makes sense.
From a point of view of muscular engagement.
Yeah.
That really works well when you've got problem body parts.
I can see that for sure. I can see that for sure. But, I just wanted to be clear to him, you know, that you're not like we're going to try to grow our pecs, so we start doing pec injections or something. It's not going to be like a site enhancement in itself.
No. And the other problem is that when you do a large muscle group like a pec, you're not getting pain spread over the pec. You're getting pain spread in one particular area.
A little knot. Yeah, that makes sense.
And that can be more detrimental than it is productive.
Mm, okay.
I found that whenever I did do shooting pecs, and I tried it because my pecs were shit. So I thought, well, if I can get more information in my pec, I'll get more focus and it'll pull away from my shoulders, which always used to be very dominant in pressing movements.
Yeah.
And all I found was that I ended up with what felt like scar tissue, but also it just tended to put more load on my tendons.
Yeah.
Because what I ended up was a constricted area of the pec, not the whole pec engaging in that constriction. I find sighting not particularly good for larger muscle groups from the benefit of that side of things.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, you can technically sight anywhere. I mean, I used to sight my calves, as already said. But I didn't go in. Now, I've always had quite a large calf, and it's always been my outer heads have always been quite thick and slabby.
Okay.
So I would go in. I'd go in through the side and across the muscle.
Oh, God. No.
Because the underlying muscle is much denser and therefore much more painful.
Okay.
And it puts tension on the Achilles heel, which is obviously an area we do not want to start having problems with.
Yeah, here's my thought too. I've seen people end up with a lot more issues injecting into smaller body parts. You know, if you use like a glute, he said he has great luck with glutes. I mean, glutes are really soft, pliable, forgiving tissue. And, you know, people are doing, I mean, I don't know how many thousands and thousands of injections are done in people's glutes every day, including depot shots of oil. But, you know, you give something like even a lateral delt, you know, you inject that with, say, 2 cc's of oil. Compare that to like the glute, it's a lot less area for it to disperse. And I feel like that's when you're a lot more likely to end up with an issue. We're talking even like a clean, sterile injection. You know, you could still get an infection from those things. If 50% of that muscle is filled up with oil, your body's going to read that as being more of an issue than if it's just a small amount, you know, given the size of the muscle. I always want to tell people to be real careful, like a bicep shot, man, you know, good luck with it, but you know, and it's done. But a lot of the guys I know who have done them, it's because they've used so much oil that it's got to go somewhere. They aren't doing it. Like pros I know, they aren't doing bicep shots necessarily to grow their biceps. They're doing it just because they got to have a place to put that oil in.
I think the other thing is as well, when you do a small muscle shot, you've got to be very careful that you get into the center. You do not want to be near the attachments.
Okay, yeah.
That's only going to cause problems. It's only going to put tension on the tendon. So you do need to make sure that you're in the center. And yes, you need to be aware of how much fluid you pump in. I mean, even at my biggest, I don't think I ever put more than 2 mil into a delt.
Okay. And you had big delts. It was a large muscle, you know?
Yeah, I think triceps, the biggest head of the triceps could cope with between 2 and 2.5 mil tops.
Okay.
And if it was test, I couldn't do more than a mil.
Really? Okay.
I'm very, very sensitive to test.
Okay.
From a point of view of information.
I'm going to look up. I think we have another question here. I wanted to see if I could get what it was specifically. I remember the gist of it. Let's see here. This was, I've got these various different threads set up. Okay, here we go. Sterilizing injectables.
Sorry.
That's Dave's Lurgy. The Lurgy. Mm. This is from, we'll say his first name, Mike. Sterilizing injectables. I saw Tony Hughes boiling some test and in a frying pan. And I've heard people saying that they put it on the oven and different, I'm going to guess he's saying esters have different boiling points. So if you boil some test 400, you could destroy a lot of it. I guess let's just talk about sterilizing gear. First of all, if you have good gear, you don't need to sterilize it, right?
Well, my first question would be, why would you want to? If I'm buying the gear that I then feel the necessary to need to boil it, I'm right. Not going to fucking use it.
Yeah.
I just don't understand that. The thought process behind that, you know, yeah, you may have to heat a gear up if it's crashed or if it's not holding suspension very well. And I understand that, but you don't have to get to very high temperatures to do that.
Yeah.
You know, 150 degrees, 15 minutes is more than enough to generally reconstitute some crashed gear. Doesn't always seem to go right though when you do, I must admit. There always seems to be a little bit of graininess in it when you try and inject it after you have heated it back up. But to actually be boiled, the two things that would concern me would be, why am I buying gear that I'm that worried about that I feel the necessary to put it at several hundred degrees in order to try and attempt to sterilize it? And two, it's in a sealed vial.
Yeah,
which is pressurized. It's not exactly the safest activity to be doing.
Yeah, I would definitely. It'd be in my opinion, like you said to start. I'd want to go with a product if I were involved in using gear. Still, I would want to go with a product that was ready to go. I wouldn't want to mess with it. The more you mess with it, the more you have to mess with it, the more chance there is for something to go wrong, would be my thought. I don't know why Tony was doing it. I don't know. Tony must have had a good reason. Maybe he just
was he just trying to, was he reconstituting some crash gear?
I don't know. He said he was boiling it in a pan, in a frying pan. I just, when I hear that, I just imagine oil in a frying pan boiling, but maybe he was boiling it in a pot of water, like a vial to reconstitute it. That would be my guess, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you have a particular problem with pit from a product, sometimes warming it up will allow it to go smoother, but you've got to remember you can't warm it up too much because you're about to inject that and you don't want to inject red hot oil into your body.
Yeah.
You've got to allow it to cool. I would be very, very dubious of actually getting to temperatures above 100 degrees in a sealed vial that's pressurized.
Yeah.
Because that seal should be airtight.
Yeah.
And if it is, you're going to create a large amount of pressure in there. You're also going to create a very hot liquid.
Absolutely. It's going to take a while to cool down.
You could have quite an explosive occurrence on your hand if you're not careful.
Hey, so are you familiar with a guy who goes by the name The Iron Duke? You ever hear of The Iron Duke?
No.
Christian Duke, that's his name. Christian Duke, he's part of Iron Mag Labs. I saw him the other week over at the Olympia. He was doing his coverage and stuff. I believe he's from Michigan here too. I know that he's definitely really dove headfirst into like bodybuilding media coverage and stuff with the sport. I think he's doing a great job. He happened to tune in for just a minute here, and he asked us a question. He said, we'll make this the final question of the show. What do you guys think about women using virilizing hormones, especially for the less muscular divisions? It makes zero sense to me. I'd like to have our listeners on it, because turns out we have some female listeners, including Mira chimed in. So we mentioned in the last episode that we had Martina Yabakova. She's a pro women's figure competitor from the Olympia. She listens, and now Mira chimed in. So shout out to Mira. She chimed in on one of our threads saying she listens too. I'd like to get their opinions, you know, because I know a woman like Maria, she's been doing this at the high level. And I feel like she's been able to maintain a lot of femininity, a lot of beauty. You know, she still looks, you know, fantastic, absolutely incredible. Yeah, she's been able to put on a lot of, you know, high quality muscle, yet she still looks like super, super feminine. I'd like to hear from them, but we don't have them, so we'll just give our own opinions. What do you think, Dave?
Give our male chauvinistic opinions.
Exactly.
I agree in that it isn't necessary, but at the end of the day, it's down to the individual's choice.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew you were going to say that. I've been doing this with you long enough. I knew it.
But, you know, in the same way that I don't think Tren for 90% of people is necessary to be used.
Yeah.
But people still use it. And then they moan about the side effects they get afterwards. It's exactly the same scenario. We have the same level of misuse or overuse or people at lower levels of physical achievement or lower levels of physical development using very strong, very harsh, very high doses, because they think it's what's necessary. And part of this is down to possibly a lack of education. Yeah. Part of this is down to just how social media and these things and how information is transferred within the community, because, you know, we do tend to discuss these strong drugs. And people, and quite rightly, do talk about the amazing results they can get off these strong drugs, which is why they're attractive to people.
Yeah.
That we don't always warn people enough of the negatives, because a lot of people just don't want to be honest about the negatives, because then you would have to answer that question was, well, why are you taking it then, you dick? And people don't want to answer that question. So they'll play down the negatives to some degree so that it doesn't look like they've made an idiotic choice.
Sure.
Unfortunately, our sport has become very drug cultured, And it's very, you know, we see it all the time. The first thing people ask, you know, what drugs are you taking? What cycle are you on? How much do you use? And very rarely you see someone actually asking about how to train. And the response to that is with everybody, because it's down to everybody to educate others that your first priority should be training, and diet and drugs should be your last priority. But unfortunately, we don't have that. And also the commercialization of the federations, in that they've tried to appeal to a broader and broader and broader and broader spectrum. They've created, particularly for females, I mean, the male classes are a big static. Okay, we've had massive growth in male physique and stuff like that. But we've now got transform classes for women. We've now got wellness classes for women. So they know there's a market there. Yeah. And as a result, they've tried to tap into that, which is all well and good. And they've pushed bodybuilding into the mainstream. But they've also pushed it into the lives of people that probably don't have the mental capability or the genetic capability to actually do it.
Mm.
And so in order to achieve the same results of others, they're having to be, they're not having to be, but they choose to be more drug focused. And it's taken away some of the natural selection out of who becomes a bodybuilder. Because now we have this chemical, and if you're willing to take enough of it, it will do away with those natural skills of either the genetics to grow muscle or the right mental work ethic to put the effort in that requires to grow muscle.
At least at the early stages, you know, if we look at, you know, as we continue on, you can only go so far with that. You know, you might be able to win your state level show by outdrugging somebody, but now go ahead and win nationals by outdrugging somebody.
You're not gonna win.
As a bikini competitor, as a figure competitor, you know, those girls have such amazing, amazing shape. It's like, you know, you can push it so far, but it's not good. You know, the Shanique Grants of the world, you know, or you know, you could even think bikini and figure. You know, it's like those girls are amazing because they're just amazing genetic specimens, and that they've worked hard to get there, you know, versus somebody who's drugging it. They can't change their bone structure, right?
No. And I think the other problem as well is as well that, you know, we constantly demand more. We constantly demand leaner, bigger, better physiques in whatever class it is. I mean, if you look at bikini now, pro level to bikini 10 years ago,
yeah,
the physiques have continued to improve and develop. And you know, there's a lack of education out there. Some people just think that's what's necessary.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff like, more so probably in the amateur ranks, but stuff like bikini girls doing carb depletes and carb loads, and it's like, for what? And it's like, for what? You know, why are you doing a depletion and a carb load? You're a bikini competitor.
Yeah.
It's not really going to make a vast amount of difference to your physique. But they feel it's necessary. You know, people talk about going on diet, and the second question out of their mouth, or the second comment out of their mouth is, yeah, I've gone on a diet, I've reduced my calories, and I've started T3 and Clan.
Yeah.
and you know, and it's become now, if I'm going to diet, I have to take fat burners. It's not a choice. It's what you must do. And this is the sort of education that's being passed on. So do I think it's unnecessary? Yes. Do I criticize the girls for doing it? Depends on each individual circumstances, because some girls just know no better. Some girls have just been brought up, and coaches have to take their hand up and be responsible for this as well.
Sure.
There's a lot of coaches out there pushing high dose drugs on the girls, because them as coaches just aren't of a caliber enough to get those girls where they need to be without.
Yeah.
So there's responsibility all across the board with this, and you can't just blame the individual, even though it is their choice. You've also got to look at what us as a society and as a community is putting out there for people to learn from.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know some females, and I've worked with a few females that have no care about how manly they look.
And that's like, all you said at the end of the day, it just comes down to preference and what somebody's, you know, what their personal decision is. Just like it did for you when you pushed to 415 pounds, you know.
I think the other thing as well is that, like we all have when we've been down that road, you don't always see yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate thing, because you get to a certain point and it can be the most innocent of comments or the most offend of comments delivered when you're least expecting it. Hmm. And there can be a sudden realization that, shit, I do look like a bloke.
Did you get one of those comments? Because that sounds like you're speaking from personal experience. Was there a moment where
I look like a bloke?
Where somebody said something to you and you're like, you know, you hadn't heard it, and then all of a sudden you're like, huh, maybe this guy's right, you know?
No, I don't think it was more. I think it was just more, I'd heard it a few times, but I think it was just more, I finally saw it. Okay. There wasn't a defining moment in that sense. It was more of a gradual realization. But someone sent me some pictures the other day, and we were discussing the same subject about female usage. And they sent me a picture of a young, very young competitor, very accomplished competitor, not in bodybuilding, in another sport. And her whiskers on her chinny chin chin were starting to rival mine.
No kidding.
Literally fine inch long hairs all coming out down the side of her chin. And it's just like, does she even see that? Does she care? She may not.
Yeah.
It's not my place to say that that's wrong. You know, I mean, if she wants to look like that, that's her choice.
Yeah.
But it's more of, does she realize how much she's starting to change?
Or has she gone down the rabbit hole? To bring it full circle, you know?
Yeah. Or is she still focusing on what she's wanting to achieve at all costs and losing sight of what it's actually costing her to achieve that?
Sure.
I mean, the unfortunate thing for women is that a lot of the physical changes tend to remain for a very long time post-usage.
Yeah.
Where with males, a lot of our physical changes do regress quite well. And so that is somewhat of a problem that the women have to deal with that we don't as much.
Well, let's wrap this thing up, Dave. We put in a good show here, and I appreciate you being candid and open as always, man. You know, I think we had some good questions here, and I appreciate, you know, everything from the beginning of the show. What do you got going on for today?
A bit of client work. Looking for some new clients. Actually, I've got a few spaces cropped up.
Right on.
So, if anyone's interested in getting big, give us a shout. Got a set of plans to, well, a set of training plans to write up for somebody. And then probably gonna dose up on Lemsip and other crap and try and shift this snotty cold.
Well, I hope that you feel better. You get rid of the lurgy.
It doesn't work, Scott. You've got to pick a book up and read it. You've got to be more fluid and more natural.
If people want to reach out to you, best way is you've got Facebook and crosslands.org.uk. Mm-hmm. Of course, guys, check out our sponsor, truenutrition.com. You can use our codes, advices, as well as advices oats. Dave Crossland, hope you feel better, man. And I will talk to you soon.
You too.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff, take care.
Radio Network.